election analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life.
We had some candidates who thought that if they went into their districts or their states and talked only about abortion and women's reproductive rights, that they were going to win. They thought that was the magic bullet. It did not work.
Brian Brown, president of the National Organization for Marriage.
Look at the races where Republicans endorse same-sex marriage. Then look at how candidates did that were Republican, that were champions of traditional marriage. You couldn't be more wrong to say that marriage didn't have an impact in the election. It had a big impact.
Greg Smith of the Pew Research Center.
Among voters who attend church or another house of worship at least weekly, almost 6 in 10 voted Republican. Among people who say they never attend religious services, most voted Democratic.
An angle on the midterm elections you won't hear covered by Fox News, CNN, or NBC. Issues Etc., your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth.
The cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be. Our contemplations of the cosmos stir us. We know we are approaching the grandest of mysteries.
This is the cosmos. A network of 100 billion galaxies. And it's the greatest story science has ever told.
Life on Earth is one of the unsolved mysteries of science.
Come with me. Our journey is just beginning.
The familiar voices of the original host of Cosmos, Carl Sagan, and the host of the rebooted version of Cosmos, Cosmos of Space-Time Odyssey, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now, this TV series was big budget. It was big name. Neil deGrasse Tyson is one of the most popular popularizers of science, and it had some kind of Hollywood power behind it. What was the goal of this TV series? Ostensibly about science education. Was there more to it than that? Did it achieve science education, which it probably should be given the basic tenets of its premise? Joining us to talk about the worldview and the people behind Cosmos of Space-Time Odyssey, Casey Luskin. He's an attorney with graduate degrees in science and law, research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, co-founder of the Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center, and author of an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled Cosmos, Materialism for the Masses. Casey, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
According to the producers and the participants of Cosmos, the latest reboot, what was the goal of that television series?
Well, they said a lot about their goals, but one of their main goals was actually, and they made this explicit, was to attack intelligent design and to try to win people over to an evolutionary viewpoint and essentially to sort of carry the torch of Carl Sagan's legacy, which was basically promoting this materialistic viewpoint that the cosmos is all there ever is, was, and ever will be. So really their goal was to promote a materialistic account of reality and push that on the public.
Now, as an attack on intelligent design, how did it fare? My sense was it didn't so much attack intelligent design as ignore it.
Well, intelligent design was mentioned in one of the episodes where they claimed that the human eye could evolve. And, of course, they didn't go into any detail about how the human eye might have evolved. They didn't really explain it. They just said, oh, you know, we've got this figured out, and this shows that intelligent design is wrong. But otherwise, you're right, they didn't talk about it a lot, but they certainly did talk about a lot of the sort of peripheral or important issues related to the debate over intelligent design and evolution, like whether or not evolutionary processes can produce new information in DNA. They claimed that it can, but they never presented other views. They only presented sort of the pro-evolution view and never talked about many of the criticisms of that view.
Now, in making, I want to get into some of the kind of personalities behind it, but in making those claims, how often in the course of that series were things merely asserted rather than argued for?
Yeah, exactly. For the most part, they would simply just assert that an evolutionary viewpoint was true, and rarely would they get into any of the evidence, certainly none of the counter-arguments. I can give you a little example. One of the main arguments they made for evolution in one of the later episodes was this old story of how humans evolved, where according to this old hypothesis, basically as the climate dried out in Africa a few million years ago, this caused many of the trees to die, and so our ape-like ancestors came out of the trees and started walking along the African grasslands, and supposedly this is what caused human intelligence to evolve. Well, they told this story in Cosmos, but they didn't mention the fact that today, a number of paleoanthropologists actually don't believe in the old, it's called the savanna hypothesis. They don't believe in the savanna hypothesis anymore because the paleoclimate data shows that the climate in Africa was not getting drier in Africa a few million years ago. It was getting wetter. And in fact, some of the supposed fossil ancestors they found weren't found in the African savanna. They were found in wooded and forest-type environments. So we can talk about those fossils later, but I mean, the bottom line is that what Cosmos was doing was promoting sort of this pet theory of how humans arose that isn't even believed by evolutionary scientists anymore. And we would see this over and over and over again where Cosmos was promoting sort of these myths and these errors. We could talk about the myths that they promoted about the history of science as well.
Before we get there, let's talk a little bit about what you call the celebrity atheist activism that was involved in the production of Cosmos.
Sure. So what's important for viewers to understand is that many of the folks behind Cosmos are basically what we would call celebrity atheists. Of course, Neil deGrasse Tyson is a famous astrophysicist who has essentially said that he personally is an atheist. And he said in an interview about Cosmos, he said that God is an ever-receding pocket of ignorance. So that's sort of his take on religion. Then you've got Brannon Braga, who is a writer for Star Trek. Nothing wrong with that. I'm a huge Star Trek fan, but Braga says that in his view, he longs for a time in the world where religion has been vanquished and reason drives our hearts. And that's a future he says he, quote-unquote, longs for. So he's very much an atheist celebrity activist. And then, of course, there's Seth MacFarlane, who is the creator of Family Guy. And Seth MacFarlane was actually one of the main movers and shakers behind the new Cosmos series. And he has said in an interview that there have to be people who are vocal about the advancement of knowledge over faith. So he's very much someone who believes that faith is bad for doing understanding the world around us. And so really what you had here was a team of celebrity atheists that got millions of dollars to try to promote their views and push them on the public.
So, and these aren't just your speculations about what may have been the goals. This is the actual producers and the participants talking about what they wanted to achieve through this television series.
Well, yeah, these are all statements that they have made, both directly about Cosmos and then other times simply where they were talking about, you know, their views on religion. But all of this plays into what they were trying to do with Cosmos. Many of these comments do come directly from what they said about their goals with Cosmos. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious that their goal was to promote an atheistic view.
Before we go to our break, let's talk about some of the positives. What did you see in Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey that you would contend or that you found to appreciate?
Yeah, I mean, we can't just critique Cosmos because I think it's important to appreciate some of the genuine positives about the series. For example, there was beautiful computer-generated imagery that animated the Cosmos reboot, and it really, I think, appealed to sci-fi fans like me. Another positive is Neil deGrasse Tyson's gifting as a science communicator, and he would use, along with his computer animation, he would offer lucid explanations of many uncontroversial scientific topics, like the structure of the atom, or the nature of DNA, or how the electromagnetic spectrum works. So there was a lot of good science and great, flashy CGI in the film. The problem was that they then sort of added on top of this uncontroversial science a pretty heavy dose of materialist philosophy that they sort of mixed in with it. And that's where things went wrong.
You mentioned before Carl Sagan's creed, the cosmos is all there ever was or has or is or will be. Take that apart for us with a few minutes here, that materialist creed.
Sure. So that statement comes from the original Cosmos, where Carl Sagan, as you said, said the cosmos is all that is or ever was or ever will be. So one of the questions you have to ask is, well, how does Carl Sagan know that's true? All that we can observe is our universe. We can't scientifically refute the idea that there is some, you know, supernatural reality outside of our universe. So Carl Sagan has no way on the basis of science to say that the cosmos is all that there ever is. He doesn't know that. He's welcome to have his own personal views, but he shouldn't be, you know, preaching them, I think, on national television as if this is the scientific consensus, because it's not the scientific consensus. There are a lot of scientists who believe that there is a reality, a supernatural reality beyond the cosmos. And in fact, one of the things that Cosmos failed to discuss was the evidence for intelligent design, basically the evidence that our cosmos is not enough to explain itself. You need some designer outside of the cosmos, or you need some intelligent agency going on within the cosmos to explain how many of the complex features of life arose. So that same credo was repeated at the very beginning of the Cosmos series, right after an endorsement from President Obama, and so this new Cosmos series really was quite unashamedly promoting the old atheist ideology of the original Cosmos series by Carl Sagan.
With only a minute here before our break, Casey, this idea that the universe is kind of this self-contained, self-explanatory reality, it sounds like what you're saying here is that for Sagan, for anyone else to maintain that all there is the cosmos, they would have to have something close to, or if not complete, knowledge of everything that there ever was and is. Is that possible?
Well, no, it's certainly not possible, and Carl Sagan has never been outside of the cosmos. He has no evidence that the cosmos is all that exists. And in fact, I think when you look at a lot of the fine-tuning of our universe for life, the fact that the physical laws and constants are very carefully set to the precise values we need for life to exist, you have to ask the question, how did the cosmic architecture of our universe get so finely tuned for life? That suggests that there's an external reality beyond our cosmos, and that some intelligent agent planned our cosmos with a purpose to allow it to be friendly to life. Of course, all of that evidence was ignored in the Cosmos series, and I think it just shows that, you know, Cosmos had its agenda, and it was not going to let the facts get in the way of that agenda.
When we come back, one of the stated goals of Cosmos was also to educate the public in the history of science, to tell the story of science itself. We'll see how Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey, did on that particular front, and then we'll come back to the subject of taking, the evidence for intelligent design that exists in the fabric of the cosmos itself, and, well, for the most part, just acting as though it wasn't there, or that it was evidence for unguided random process. We'll be right back.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people. For unto us a child is born. Good news of great joy. The titles of Christ. The Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. AdCrucem.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com. AdCrucem.com.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. On this Monday afternoon, November the 10th, we are talking about the personalities, the ideas, and the worldview behind Cosmos, a Space-Time Odyssey. Casey Luskin is our guest. He's an attorney with graduate degrees in science and law, research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, co-founder of the Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center, and he's authored an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Cosmos Materialism for the Masses. Casey, one of the things that Cosmos did, it would, in every episode, tell a little story about the history of science itself. How did the series do?
Well, the viewership was, I think it was lower than what they expected and what they hoped for. And they were hoping that Cosmos would be renewed for a second season, and it was not renewed because the viewership response just was not what they were looking for. Still, though, I mean, they had, I think, you know, on the order of a few million viewers every week, which is pretty good when you're talking about, you know, watching a science TV show. Not everybody's interested in that. So they certainly reached a lot of people. Whether they reached as many as they hoped they would is another question, but it certainly was a big deal, yeah.
Okay, but when they tell the history of science, did they get the actual facts of history right?
Yeah, this was one of the worst examples, I think, of Cosmos's errors. Well, maybe best examples of one of their errors, depending on how you look at it. This was where the agenda of Cosmos to promote this materialist ideology really prevented them from telling the truth. In the very first episode of Cosmos, they told the story of this 16th century philosopher named Giordano Bruno, who promoted the idea that the Earth goes around the sun. Okay, nothing wrong with that. The Earth goes around the sun. And what they claimed was that Bruno was a scientist who was burned at the stake for his scientific views that the Earth orbits the sun. Well, the problem with that is that Bruno was not a scientist, and unfortunately he was burned at the stake, but it actually had nothing to do with his heliocentric views. It had to do with the fact that he was basically teaching these weird heretical views where he was promoting the occult worship of Egyptian deities. And back in those days, that didn't make the Catholic Church like you very much. So unfortunately, he was burned at the stake, but this was not a case of sort of a scientist being persecuted for their scientific views by the church. That was the story that Cosmos wanted to tell, sort of to bring out this old myth that religion stands in the way of the progress of science and religion is always, you know, persecuting those poor scientists. Well, the Catholic Church did persecute some people, and that wasn't good, but in this case, they were not persecuting a scientist, and it had nothing to do with this guy's scientific views. So they sort of invented this myth. Another example was later in Cosmos, they talked about some of the early versions of scientific thinking that arose in China by this philosopher named Mozi. And in the episode, Neil deGrasse Tyson claims that he tries to portray Mozi as if Mozi was anti-religious. And he claims that Mozi wrote this book titled Against Faith. Well, the actual title of the book was Against Fate, or Rejecting Fatalism, and in fact, Mozi himself was very much a proponent of religion. In fact, it's been recognized by historians that he promoted sort of this monotheistic-like Christian ethic of love, and in fact, he was definitely not anti-religious, so this was not an example of science being promoted by somebody who was sort of an early atheist type. Actually, this person was a monotheist and had a Judeo-Christian concept of God. So I think Cosmos really had some misfires in its attempt to paint the history of science as if it's one of religion standing in the way of scientific progress. And of course, the worst part about it all was Cosmos didn't mention any of the numerous historians who have recognized that religion played a positive role in the development of science. And instead, they tried to frame religion always as standing in the way of science, when really quite the opposite is the case.
Did they depict, because you're talking here about the advents of modern science, almost to a person, they would have called themselves natural philosophers, but they were men of faith of varying degrees. Did they address that at all?
Well, they did, as a matter of fact, but they didn't address it in a forthright way. So, for example, the series talked about Newton, and Neil deGrasse Tyson said that Newton was a genius, and he noted that Newton believes in God. But then the next thing Neil deGrasse Tyson said was that Newton's religious faith served as the closing of a door and didn't lead anywhere. Well, if you know the history of science and if you know the history of Newton, the opposite is true. In fact, it was Newton's religious faith that inspired him to believe that the universe would be comprehensible because he believed in a God who would create a rational, intelligible, and orderly universe, and he thought that if he went out and studied the natural world, he could actually discover something about the mind of God. And then, of course, Newton went out and studied the natural world, discovered these laws of motion that worked really well, and we've been using them ever since. So the reality is that it was Newton's religious faith that actually inspired him to go do science, rather than what Neil deGrasse Tyson said. He claimed that it was the closing of a door for Newton's intellectual investigations. So, yeah, they did talk about the religious faith of some of the early scientists, but they got the influence of that faith on science exactly wrong.
Do they address the general question that you raise in your article, which is, you know, the West, the Western world for the better part of its history is deeply influenced by Christianity and by religion in general? Did they address the question why modern science, how modern science could possibly arise in that environment if religion is hostile to science?
No, of course they didn't. But of course that is a question of great interest to people who are historians of science and religion. They've spent a lot of time thinking about, well, why is it that modern science arose in the Judeo-Christian West? Was there something special about the Judeo-Christian worldview that led to the birth of science in the West? And of course, many modern historians of science have said yes. In fact, the reason why science arose in the West is because the Judeo-Christian worldview caused people to believe, much like Newton did, that the universe would be orderly and comprehensible. You believed that there was a creator who gave us minds, that wanted us to explore reality. People believed that God created the universe in a way where it was not something that was sacred and that we weren't allowed to look at or touch or think about, but really he created the universe for us to enjoy and us to understand and to enrich our lives and our minds. So there were all these values that came right out of sort of a biblical Judeo-Christian worldview that led to the birth of modern science. And there's a very rich literature among leading secular historians of science that recognize the positive influences of religion upon the origin of science. But of course, Cosmos discussed none of this. It ignored all of it, and it just sort of boiled everything down to this very simplistic and totally wrong formula that science is good and religion is bad. I mean, that's pretty much the message you get, but they don't give any thoughtful treatment of this subject.
Now, they have been criticized, the producers have been criticized for some of the obvious errors that they made in terms of fact. But some, you note, Joseph Martin, who's an historian, are willing to give Cosmos a pass, not only on kind of unintentional inaccuracies, but even intentional ones. What's there?
Yeah, well, and going back to what you said just a moment ago as well, yeah, one of the most interesting points was that even leading evolutionists who are very predisposed to endorse Cosmos recognized and actually criticized the anti-religious bias and what they called the slipshod history of science that was in Cosmos. So because of these, it sort of was acknowledged in the evolutionary community that, yeah, Cosmos got some things wrong, and it was basically telling false claims about the history of science and religion and putting out this false narrative that religion hindered science. So this one historian of science named Joseph Martin asked if it would be acceptable, basically, for Cosmos to lie, that was his word, for Cosmos to lie, if it was doing that in sort of service of a good cause, namely promoting the public trust of science. And he sort of comes to the conclusion that, yeah, maybe it is okay for Cosmos to lie, sort of a means justifies, or an ends justifies the means kind of thinking, where if your purpose is good, to get the public to trust science, then he basically said, yeah, well, maybe it's okay for Cosmos to lie in service of that greater cause. Well, for me, I mean, if you have to lie in service of your cause, then you have to ask whether that cause really is a good cause. I mean, I don't think the truth should ever need lies in order to have it supported and advocated. So, you know, it was pretty disturbing and disgusting to see people, as you said, giving Cosmos a free pass for its just outrageously false claims about the history of science and religion. And they only did that because they wanted the public to be able to just adopt this materialistic philosophy that was being promoted by Cosmos.
On the subject of academic or intellectual freedom, Cosmos obviously is going to stand on the side of that. And I don't think either of us would disagree with the need for that, for scientific inquiry to flourish. But how does the worldview represented by Cosmos, how is its track record on granting genuine intellectual freedom?
Yeah, that's the really funny thing, Todd, is, of course, you know, hundreds of years ago, it is true that the church was persecuting people that disagreed with it, and that wasn't good. It was not good for intellectual freedom. It was not good for just freedom in general in society. Well, today, in the year 2014, we still have people who are out there trying to restrict freedom of thought, but it's not the church. It's sort of these intolerant atheist types who are trying to prevent people from challenging evolutionary viewpoints in schools and evolutionary viewpoints in the academy. Now, Cosmos never stands up and says, oh, we've got to squelch those scientists who disagree with evolution. But you can kind of see just from the way that they frame things in their series that there were no no challenges to evolution that were discussed in any kind of a fair or objective kind of fashion. They constantly promoted the pro-evolution only view, even to the point of getting things wrong and promoting view, sort of weird fringe views that are not really accepted in the scientific community anymore. So I think Cosmos certainly, although they officially took the side of academic freedom and intellectual freedom, I think when it comes down to what they put in their series, they really did not represent these debates in a very fair manner.
When they take up biological evolution per se in Cosmos, how would you characterize the way that the origins and evolution of life was presented?
Well, officially, Cosmos said that they didn't understand how life arose. So at least they acknowledged that. However, immediately right after that statement in the series, they then went on to propose various accounts of how life might have arisen, and of course, every single account was a strictly naturalistic account. So for people who claim they don't know how life arose, they're sure acting as if they do know how life arose, and it arose naturalistically. There were some other sort of fringe accounts of how life arose that were promoted. One of those is called panspermia. Cosmos promotes this kind of weird view that is pretty widely rejected by the scientific community called panspermia. It's the idea that life came to Earth from outer space. And a very good number of prominent physicists have rejected panspermia because it's really difficult to understand how life could survive for long periods of time in the cold, harsh, and not so life-friendly environments that we find in outer space. Nonetheless, Cosmos promotes it without any mention of the criticisms, kind of saying, look, maybe they basically were suggesting this is how life spread throughout the galaxy, and their galaxy is full of life. So, yeah, Cosmos definitely had its own narrative of how life arose. Now, what's interesting is that while Cosmos was promoting these fringe views about the origin of life, they would bash people who are skeptics of the quote-unquote consensus. And we can talk about this some more, but really we're even comparing skeptics of the consensus to Nazi-like followers who were, you know, basically following the Nazis back in World War II. And so for me, that, again, is really anti-academic freedom when they are casting skeptics in that very negative light.
Now, one part of intelligent design, or kind of a question that must be answered by any person who undertakes an exploration into origins, be it of the universe or of life, is something you mentioned here several times, that is fine-tuning. How is it that the world that we find around us appears to be not just finely tuned, but tuned to such a beyond microscopic degree to support life? Does Cosmos take on that question head on?
They did not take it on head on because they avoided discussing a lot of the evidence for fine tuning. But what we saw in Cosmos was in the very last episode, they had this long quote from Carl Sagan from the original Cosmos that they replayed. And in those quote, Carl Sagan basically says that the Earth is a lonely speck that's in no privileged position in our galaxy, and that we're sort of floating through space, lost in the universe. And the idea here, of course, is that, you know, we live in this universe that is indifferent to whether we exist, and nobody cares about us. And he even cites, he calls it the delusion that we live in some privileged place in the universe. Okay, so that sort of gets to the question of fine-tuning. So even if Cosmos doesn't want to talk about whether there's something special about our universe directly, it's sort of addressing it in a tangential manner. So what's interesting is that they quote Carl Sagan saying that our Earth, our planet, exists in a very unspecial place in our galaxy. And the original Cosmos series, when Sagan said that, actually inspired a research project by pro-ID scientists like Guillermo Gonzalez to go out and actually study whether our Earth really is in sort of an unimportant location in our galaxy. And what Guillermo Gonzalez found is that, in fact, we do live in a very important location in the galaxy. We are far enough away from the center of the galaxy to avoid a lot of the harmful radiation at the center, but we're far enough away from the center of the galaxy to allow enough heavy elements to exist that can form the basis for rocky planets like our planet Earth. And so what Guillermo Gonzalez basically says, and he's pro-intelligent design, by the way, and he says in his book, The Privileged Planet, that we live in a very special location in the galaxy that he calls the galactic habitable zone. And all of this really was inspired by trying to challenge the viewpoint of Carl Sagan that is promoted both in the old Cosmos series and the new one. And so I found it very ironic that they would promote this view that the Earth does not live in a privileged or special location, when in fact there's been a lot of research that's come out that shows actually we do have a very special location. I would have hoped that Cosmos would have addressed that evidence, but of course it just ignored it and promoted this old materialistic idea that we don't live in any kind of a special location in the galaxy.
Casey Luskin is an attorney with graduate degrees in science and law. He's a research coordinator for the Discovery Institute, co-founder of the Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center, and author of an article in the latest Christian research journal titled Cosmos, Materialism for the Masses. You will find links to Intelligent Design and Evolution Awareness Center and to the Discovery Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Casey, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks so much for having me.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time on this Monday afternoon, as we usually do, with Pastor Tom Baker, host of the radio show called Law and Gospel. Every time he joins us, we're teaching a Sunday school lesson looking for Christ in the pages of Holy Scripture, back to Genesis chapter 24, to the story of Isaac and Rebekah. Abraham wants a wife for his son Isaac, but he insists that this wife not come from among the Canaanites, but from his own family. We'll find out why right after this.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th Century. The 4th Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.